Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Mike Florio is on Twitter at Pro Football Talk. He of that and NBC Sports. And he's brought to you by Webb Ford. Searching for a great deal on Fords in Chicago? Visit Webb Ford in Highland, Indiana. Mike, I saw the note yesterday that you posted that scoring is at a record pace through five games, that touchdowns are at an all-time record, and the viewership is high. The games are close. They're high-flying. This is what we want, isn't it?
Well, it's definitely what the NFL wants, and it's what the NFL thinks the fans want. And the NFL is pushing these numbers. I'm not crunching the numbers and doing research back to the 2013 season, 2011. These are numbers they're putting out. And scoring is up. Passing is up. It's amazing to me. The average passer rating is 93.4. I remember when 93.4 put you at the top of the league. Now it's the average. And that's a testament to improved quarterback play, improved receiver play. So many receivers now who can make the moves, can make the catches. You know, all these 7-on-7 camps and tournaments that we hear about. Somebody's catching those passes. And that's creating better receivers than ever before. And it all gets thrown together into the same big vat with increased sensitivity to roughing the passer. And it all leads to more exciting football, more scoring, higher ratings, more money for the NFL. And ultimately, that's what it's all about.
You mentioned it, Mike. The roughing the passer penalties are up at a historic pace. Is the NFL going to use this as correlative evidence? Are they going to say eventually when we tell them the rule sucks that they don't care because the points are up and everybody's watching and that's part of the reason why?
Well, I think this is part of the ammunition that the league office will use in its ongoing tension with the competition committee over the roughing the passer fouls, because the conference call they had a couple of weeks ago, the end result was the competition committee wanting only obvious roughing the passer calls to be made, and the league office handling any other violations that are determined on careful review of game film through fines and ultimately suspensions. And the league office instructed the referees after that competition committee conference call, hey, if you see it, you call it. And that's what we've seen for the most part. I think there was some shying away in some instances, but there were some questionable calls this weekend that weren't blatant but still got called, and I think that that's what the league wants. And the league points to increased scoring, increased passing performances, and increased urgency to keep the best quarterbacks on the field.
We were also wondering if the turnover in the referee ranks had something to do with this, if there are more young referees, rookie referees, you've had some notable retirements, that maybe instead of a longtime guy being like, all right, I'll take it under advisement, boss, I know it when I see it, that there are some younger referees simply calling this to the letter of the instruction.
Well, but one of the guys who was the most notorious was Tony Corrente. He had a couple of controversial roughing calls in the week two game between the Vikings and the Packers. So I think it's just inconsistency among the 17 referees, period. I talked to TJ Watt after his three-sack performance against the Falcons that also included a questionable roughing call. And he said, I can't worry about it because I understand some referees are going to call it, some aren't. So I'm just going to go play, and whatever happens, happens. And if they give up 15 yards of field position, so be it. I'll just sit back and hope I don't get fined.
Odell Beckham, I think, is right about what he's saying concerning the Giants. The problem is he's saying it out loud. How long can that last? How quickly can that situation disintegrate completely?
Well, you know, the Giants got very lucky on this for a couple of reasons. First of all, the players didn't know what he said, and a lot of them still don't know what he said. And as crazy as that sounds for those of us who obsess over every little nugget and piece of information we can get about football, I talked to somebody yesterday who's plugged in with the Giants locker room, and this person said to me, hey, you ask them about Fortnite, they'll tell you about Fortnite. You ask them about football, they don't know. And you throw a short week on top of that, they don't have a day off to catch up on anything or do radio spots where people ask him questions about it, make them aware maybe of things they didn't otherwise know about. And I think that that's contributed to the Giants players not reacting maybe the way we thought they would to some of these comments, because most of them still don't know what he said, because they're not in the locker room an hour before kickoff watching the pregame shows to see Odell Beckham's interview with Lil Wayne riding sidecar to the conversation. And I think that that helped the Giants get past this. Now, does it get past it long term? Do these problems still arise? Rodney Harrison had a great point yesterday on PFT Live with me that at some point somebody's got to hold this guy accountable, whether it's coaching staff or the players. And until someone does, he's going to continue to create these disruptions from time to time.
We have played the comments of John Clayton on our sister station WIP in Philadelphia. He was speculating that perhaps Jordan Howard would be a target of the Eagles in trade as they try to shore up the running back position. And some of that might be bolstered in context because there were trade rumors that surrounded Howard shortly after the arrival of the Nagy regime in April, wondering about the kind of fit that he would be for this system. Are you hearing anything that legitimizes this, or is this completely made up?
Well, I think it may be informed speculation, because the idea is if Howard doesn't fit, what can you do to get value for him? But the counterbalance to that is his contract. He's still operating under the terms of a very favorable rookie contract. That's one of the most important benefits to teams of the 2011 collective bargaining agreement. It creates a true rookie wage scale, and it makes it so much cheaper to keep guys around. So you can keep Jordan Howard around at a bargain basement price and use him at will. And you use him and Tariq Cohen, and Jordan Howard's not complaining about it, at least not publicly. Maybe he is privately, but you keep him around because dollar for dollar, it makes a ton of sense. And then next year you make a decision when he's in the final year of his contract what you're going to do. So unlike a LeSean McCoy who's been linked to the Eagles and he's making significantly more money, unlike a Le'Veon Bell where it's just a problem for the Steelers to figure out what they're going to do with him, those are the two names that have come up. But the Eagles clearly need help when it comes to the running back position. They claim they're going to stand pat, but I think that's just part of the posturing that you have to do in order to do the best possible deal when the trade deadline arrives. And if you have the Bears involved and the Steelers and the Bills, the more teams you can get involved, the better chance you have to work out a deal where you can help yourself the best possible way. But from the Bears' perspective, that just means they have to really be motivated to move him and be willing to take maybe less than they would get, because the Eagles are going to have other options.
With all the money they've spent, though, whether it be on offense or defense, and specifically tied up in Khalil Mack, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to move a guy who's cost-controlled
exactly. And
productive.
You're exactly right. That's why you hang on to him, and then you let him walk away as a free agent, and you get the compensatory draft pick consideration the year after he goes. But you're right. You know, running backs especially, if they're productive and you have them at a cheap rate, you use them up, and then when it's time to move on, they move on.
What did you find meaningful about the Drew Brees celebration, the record-breaking, everything that was said about him?
Well, two things. First of all, David Baker wearing white gloves to handle a football. I thought the guy was getting ready to give somebody a prostate exam, and as my radio producer Stats pointed out, that's a terrifying prospect because he is a very large man with very large hands. And secondly, can we give Drew Brees something more significant than a laminated piece of paper commemorating the achievement? I mean, if I was him, and you know how when you have something like that laminated, you can kind of flip it like a frisbee and just off it goes. That's what I'd have done with the thing. It's like, really? I'm the all-time leading passer in NFL history, and you give me a laminated sheet of paper. So I thought that, one more point, I thought that, you know, ESPN was a little over the top with the Drew Brees praise. I don't know where the right balance is. But then at one point, Booger McFarland says, you know, he may end up one of the top 10 quarterbacks of all time. No, he's already top 10. He's got all the records. He will have all the records. He's still got passing touchdowns to achieve before he retires. And he's got a championship, and he may have a second one. He's already top 10. The question is, how high up the list does he finish? And he's still got more football to play.
After the whole thing against the Buccaneers, we talked a little bit, Mike, about the league-wide perception of Mitch Trubisky and whether that's changed or not. Maybe the better question to ask, and here's one for you, is whether the league perception on Matt Nagy has changed some. Whether the idea of a guy who can make the scheme work against defenses that are hurting in places, whether that's altered the perception of the head coach of the Bears.
Well, look, I think that this Andy Reid coaching tree has bumped up in esteem around the league between Doug Peterson winning a championship. Andy Reid 5-0 again for the second straight year. They're trying this year to not have 5-0 become 6-6. And you look at what they've done. And what a challenge this week, a Dolphins team that, you know, started off 3-0 and has balance, and you're playing them in Miami, and you got 2 weeks to get ready for it. And that's been one of Andy Reid's staples. When you have 2 weeks to get ready for a game, he's almost unbeatable. So it'll be interesting to see what the Bears have. And you know, you get to 4-1. I mean, I'm trying to find the teams that can disrupt Rams, Saints as the top two seeds in the NFC, and I think the Bears are one of the teams that maybe can.
Is there anything to this cluster of missed kicks, or is this just like that time in the summer when there's a couple of shark attacks and immediately it becomes the year of the shark? Is it just a statistical anomaly, or is kicking worse because kickers are looked at as more fungible than they used to be?
No, I think the problem is, and we saw the decline in overall kicking accuracy begin when they moved the extra point from the 2 back to the 15 where the snap happens. And The thinking was, by taking away that chip shot gimme kick, that's that way that kickers can kind of keep everything greased and loose. And you go out and you have that, you know, it's almost impossible to miss an extra point that's a 19-yard field goal. So now it's a real field goal that you have to kick. And so that maybe gives these guys a little bit more of the yips, and that's contributed to this rash, I think, of missed kicks, because you don't, you know, it's one thing to kick into the net on the sideline. It's another thing to go out there and be in game conditions and snap, spot, hold, kick. And you do that for a couple of touchdowns. It's easier to do it when it's time to go kick a field goal. So maybe there's something to that. And I think it does date back to when they pushed that snap point from the 2 to the 15.
You don't get the sense anything's changing back on that because of a spate of missed kicks,
right? No, I think
right?
they like that. Yeah. I think they like it. They want teams to go for it more on fourth down. They want teams to go for 2 more frequently. I think one of the biggest stories of the weekend that justifies more attention is that after 23 years of the two-point conversion being part of the NFL, we're finally having the conversation. And I'd like to say that, boy, it would have been great for me to think of this at some point. The idea that when you're down 14 in the second half, you go for 2 and you score a touchdown to put yourself in position to win the game in regulation, and how the analytics actually favor that going for 2. Because everybody's like, what the hell is Doug Peterson doing when the Eagles were down 14 to the Vikings and they went for 2 and they got it? You enhance the chance of winning in regulation. You still can go for 2 if you get another touchdown. And if you go for 1, you're just playing for overtime. And with overtime, you may lose. You're going to have more reps that you expose your players to. I mean, the Browns have played 30 extra minutes in 5 games. So I think that we may see more coaches do this if more people get behind the idea that it's not unconventional. So many coaches are afraid to do what's unconventional, but it's not unconventional to go for 2 when you're down 14, and maybe we'll see more coaches finally embrace this idea of just going for 2 generally.
It's so hard to have some of these conversations because it's a broader conversation about game theory, about what is simply objectively the right thing to do to increase your team's likelihood at the margins of winning the game. I heard yesterday on our afternoon show, McNeil and Parkins were talking to Brian Billick and bringing up some of these ideas about what to do and when to do it and when to go for it, even if it's 4th and 3. And Bill, you know, I love Brian, but he just like, well, you know, these numbers don't know what's really going on. They don't know the pulse of your team. They don't know the trend line of a game and all that. And I'm yelling in my car. That's not the point. The point is there are hard numbers that suggest likelihoods based on outcomes independent of all that. And I'm just wondering what it's going to take to not coaches, broadcasters, everybody around football have that sort of baseball-like enlightenment that there's a completely different way to look at these things.
It all comes down, in my opinion, to what is perceived as conventional and what is perceived as unconventional, because coaches know if they do the conventional thing and fail, nobody's going to say boo. If you do the unconventional thing and fail, then you get criticized, and if you do that enough, it becomes a factor in whether or not you're going to be fired at some point. I really do think that has a lot to do with it. And now we're seeing, you know, this whole concept of going for it on fourth down becoming more of an open question. And Jason Garrett does the conservative thing on Sunday night in overtime, and he punts 4th and 1 from the Houston 42, and he gets criticized for doing what, you know, we would call maybe the more conventional thing, pin them down, try to hold them there and get the ball back and get the game-winning field goal. You have more of a willingness now by coaches and by media and by fans and by owners to accept this notion of going for it on fourth down. And I think that going for two could fall into that same category. And it all traces back to Doug Peterson. He's the reason so many guys are going for it on fourth down, or at least considering it. And I think he's the reason now, if we go forward with this whole idea of behind by 14, going for two instead of going for one.
Mike, thank you as always. We appreciate it.
See you guys.
That is Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.